Midweek Wednesday style, you and I together on July 26th, 2023. We featured a chat with Bridgeport Republican mayoral candidate David Herz. Herz, Connecticut media columnist and editor Dan Haar stopped by for his weekly chat. Quinnipiac University finance professor Osman Kilich talked about the latest federal interest rate news, and I had a few thoughts regarding the Bridgeport mayoral race. We, of course, along with all the other media outlets in the area, have been talking about the four-way primary coming up for the Democratic nomination for the 2023 Bridgeport mayoral election. But the Bridgeport Republican Party is still out there. They're active. And the nominee this time around is attorney David Herz, who's joining us right now. He has been endorsed by the Bridgeport Republican Town Committee, Bridgeport Republicans, and he will be on the ballot coming up in November. David, hi, it's Paul at WICC. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm good, David. So let me ask the question here, because you probably hear this all the time, and we know how the cities work, David, in Connecticut, you know, whether it's Bridgeport, Hartford, or New Haven. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago Bridgeport had a Republican mayor or mayors in the past. But you must get the question, David, why? Because a lot of people would say, well, you've got no real shot here. So let's try that. When you hear, geez, David, what the heck are you doing this for? What's your response?
You know, you got to be in it. It's that simple. I used to live on the Upper West Side of New York, and I ran against Scott Stringer way back in the day. And, you know, we're a republic. If you get out there and you talk to the people, you realize how much closer we all are to each other than the press seems to make it appear. You know, we all want good education for our kids. We all want safe streets. You know, we differ a little bit about how to achieve that. But if you're not in the conversation, you know, you're just complaining from the sidelines. I don't want to be one of those people. I'd rather be out there. I'd rather be talking to people. I'd rather give them ideas. And it's the marketplace of ideas. We don't have a marketplace of ideas anymore. I'm about that. I'm about the You're leaving blank airspace there.
No, that's okay.
But I'd say basically what I am about is to promote the healthy sovereignty of the – to buttress and sustain the healthy sovereignty of the individual. And that's a classical liberal happen to side on the Republican side of that. It's just exciting to be in this town, so why not be a part of it?
So, David, what would you say if you had to put something at the top of a long list of issues facing a city like Bridgeport? What pops up as number one in your mind, if you can isolate that for us? What would you say is, man, this is issue one I would go to work on?
So I'm going to put it general first. A celebration of life. I think that we in the if you look around the world, we're not replacing ourselves. There's a birth gap. There's an epidemic of unplanned childlessness. We don't plan. When you and I went to kids, we all knew we were going to grow up, get married, have kids. That's just not the default position for people anymore. They're like, you have to convince me why I need to have kids. I think we've lost our values. We've lost our sense of community. If we could make one thing happen again, it would be actually kids having fathers in their homes. If we could have a mother and a father in every home that there's a child, our chances of, the crime rates would go down, the success rates would go up. I mean, you need a strong male influence in a home. I don't care what you tell me about alternative lifestyles. It makes a huge difference to have both a mother and a father there.
As we head into the municipal election cycle coming up in November, the Republican candidate for mayor of the great city of Bridgeport, attorney David Herz, joins us here for a few minutes. We'll get back to open phones after that. David, in your field of being an attorney, what have you seen dealing with clients, meeting, talking to people that if you were elected mayor of Bridgeport, some of the lessons you've learned from people and some of the things you've seen and experienced that you would use segueing to becoming mayor?
I don't know that it comes from the attorney side. I do mostly estate planning, probably more from the coach side. There's a part of me that loves to be a coach. And I've answered 7,000 questions on Quora in the area of relationship.
Yeah.
I think the thing that we're missing is really listening for what's going on with the other side. I mean, you know, great radio hosts, for instance, they listen and then they respond. They give it a moment and then they respond instead of just trying to step over the get their point out on the other side of it. Which is, you know, why I'm here on this call with you, because I know you listen and that you don't take things at face value.
Well, so. Why do you think, David, we've gotten that way? Because like you said earlier, I think, and I agree with you, David, I think that we agree on a lot more, both sides, whether it's Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, small town, big town. I think people generally agree on a lot more. You know, I always say it's the loud voices that get undue attention. What are your thoughts on that?
I completely agree with you, but I think we're speaking into echo chambers, and social media makes it, you know, the algorithm doesn't challenge us. The algorithm puts us where we're going to spend more time, and that's with other people who are spouting the same stuff that we're speaking. If you want to look at it critically and historically, I'd say you've got 60 years of our institutions of higher education going in the wrong direction. You have a stranglehold of the NEA and teachers and faculties of education providing policy after policy that is not based in science. You want a great and easy fix for getting teachers in our schools is to do away with the whole accreditation of teachers and that whole system and have people who have a bachelor's degree in something that they're passionate about and put them in front of the students. That passion comes through. You can learn the skills of teaching. I'm just taking a for instance. That's people's skills that you can learn, but you don't need to go to a faculty of education that's going try to stuff you with, you know, Garner's theories of multiple intelligences, which everyone knew was BS from the beginning. I could go on a lot of different topics.
Let me ask you this. What, Bridgeport gets a bad rap, David, and it's sad because there are thousands of good, hardworking people in the city, but things happen politically and whatever. What's good about Bridgeport? Are the people you see and you know and you want to become mayor, what's good about the city?
Oh, there are so many people who just love and care about this city. Whether it's like the Bridgeport Rescue Mission, whether it is, Vince Santilli with his Homes for the Brave, the Bridgeport Regional Business Council and their activity to, just bring business here. We have hundreds of manufacturers in the area. You know, I went to recently to Housatonic College, had an open house for kids, you know, coming out of high school and wanting to work in the area. You have an art scene here. There are just a lot of downtown special services district, the AMP. We've got a lot of things that are just about celebrating Bridgeport and the people here, and I think the people here really love this town. Just want it to be a little better. They don't want developers to stop at the border of Bridgeport and say, I don't want to do business there because it's too difficult to do business in Bridgeport. I'd rather do business in Trumbull or Fairfield or Stratford. Those are the kinds of things. We have a deep water port. Why aren't we using it better? Things like that.
What would be issue number one? So David Herz, in a stunning upset, with all due respect, is elected mayor of Bridgeport. Day one, 9 a.m. in the morning, David, you sit in the big seat in City Hall, and what's the first thing on your mind?
The first thing on my mind?
Figuring out the phone system, which we all have to do.
I get it. The first thing on my mind is actually sitting down with all the people who are already operating the city right now. I think we made a great choice with Chief Porter. I know the city council is trying to, but we're 120, cops short in this town at least. We're I think, budgeted or they're slated for 400 and change, and we have in the 300 somewhere. So I think security is something that people worry about. I think, unfortunately, we haven't. We you know, we haven't supported cops. We've let this craziness go, and cops, you see people, you know, driving up and down the street with their on their motorbikes, on their things without, you know, so we don't sell them gasoline anymore, but any gardener with a gas can pull up to the pump and fill that can and then go back and fill the ATVs and the other things. So I think security is certainly a thought here. Number one, you know, I want to sit down with the churches and with all of the people that deal with the community and see what we can do to build community and build connection and foster family. Because, you know, if you've got connections, you don't fall through the cracks in the same way.
Yeah. Interesting thoughts. Yep, interesting thoughts. David, if people want to get more information on you, on your candidacy, what can they do?
Well, they can visit my website, davidherz.org, D-A-V-I-D-H-E-R-Z, or they can give me a call. There's the best way is mayor@davidherz.org.
All right, mayor@davidherz.org, D-A-V-I-D-H-E-R-Z .org, not .com, .org. David, thanks to you. Good luck, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Thank you, David. Appreciate it. David Herz, H-E-R-Z, davidherz.org, or mayor@davidherz.org, and he says everything should emanate from the family. I think that's a bipartisan thought, my friends. Think so, folks. It's a midweek Wednesday. We are exactly halfway to the weekend. We check in with our buddy, our pal Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and editor as well. Dan, good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Great to be here. If it's Wednesday, end of business day, then we're 60% of the way there, right?
That's right. I guess the tipping point would be, noon or 1 o'clock?
Noon, Wednesday. That's right. Yeah.
There you go. So, Dan, a cornucopia of stuff, and I did read your recent piece regarding the motor... I despise this tax. The motor vehicle tax. Supposedly, we were going to reform that, Dan. Where do we stand on that?
Well, it's a big chaotic mess. It's a complex story that would take about 40 seconds of me talking fast. But suffice it to say that in 2022, the legislature didn't like the system we had and fixed it, but couldn't get the fix through the votes. And they stuck it in quietly in the budget anyway. And then in that summer, we realized that, oh, no, the cities and towns were going to lose lots of money if we did that. So we had another fix this year, but that couldn't get through either. And we tried to stick that in quietly, but Senator Norm Needleman instead came in and said, hold on, ladies and gentlemen, let's just put it off a year. So we've put it off for another year. So in short, the system that we know doesn't work very well is delayed for another year, and we'll work on it next year. The long and the short of it is it has to do with how you value cars. There are two distinct methods of doing it. Mm-hmm. One is how much is your car worth on the open market, according to the National Automotive Retailers Association or Automobile Dealers Association. And the other is, what is a straight line depreciation? Year one, it's worth 80%, year two, and so on and so on. Hmm. And those two methods give people decidedly different outcomes. And so there's winners and losers.
And so much revenue, Dan, is relied upon from this tax, especially on the city and town level. And I guess part of that fix we've tried over the past few years is, what, a maximum mill rate, and then there was going to be the compensation. So the cities and towns often complain about any idea of doing this differently, right?
Well, yeah, that's exactly the problem, is that if you reform the tax, this is a tax that brings in real money, you know, obviously hundreds of millions of dollars, more than a billion statewide, probably more than a billion. I don't know that. I think it's in the billion-dollar range. I should know the answer, and I don't. Next week I'll have it. But it's a lot of money, and if you change the way it's done, one of two things can happen. You can end up costing taxpayers more money and we scream and yell rightly, or you can end up costing towns money and they scream and yell. And there's very little way to fix it without having a big set of winners and losers, especially within a town even. So I happen to think that the tax, while obviously unfair between towns, right, the same Honda Civic in Greenwich
sure.
is taxed way less than in Hartford because the mill rates are different. But within a town, the tax is very fair and creates equity rather than eliminates equity. Because if my neighbor chooses to drive a, you know, brand new Jaguar,
mm-hmm.
he pays a much higher tax. And if that tax goes away, I have to make it up in my house tax.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, if we just say we don't like this car tax, it's going to go away. That money has to be made up somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yes, you can lower the cost of government. That would be nice. Maybe we can't do that. Or maybe we have to charge higher mill rates of taxes. Or maybe we have to raise the state taxes even higher to make up for the towns their loss of revenue. Money has to come from somewhere.
Dan Haar is the guest, Hearst Connecticut Media. We check in with him every Wednesday at 5. Dan, this state police ticket, this bogus ticket story from the state police, this is a bizarre story. What's your take on this?
Well, my take on it is that it's not very well understood. For an emerging scandal, you know, I like in my scandals a bit of understandability. Now, all scandals, let's take the one involving Costa Diamantis, the school construction czar for the state of Connecticut a year and a half ago, right? You know, that was not a very well understood scandal, but at least we knew that he was accused of steering cities and towns, especially in school construction, to favored contractors that he had. No smoking gun in that one, but at least we knew what the basic. Here, it's not clear. Why were the troopers doing this? What tickets are we talking about? Is it tickets? It's mostly, as I understand it, it's mostly tickets that are warnings. In other words, they were writing that I gave, Dan Haar a warning.
Yeah.
And Dan Haar was white, even if he just made it up, right? I say even if he was black, but you were just making it up. And so what's happening is that even though the underlying scandal is not well understood, it's starting to spin out of control. We now Chief Ravella, I call him Chief because he was the Hartford Fire Chief, but he's Commissioner Ravella, revealed in a hearing today that there may be a Justice Department investigation in addition to the U.S. Transportation Department investigation arising from highway money. There also is an independent investigation that Lamont has assigned his former Deidre Daly, the former U.S. attorney.
Yeah.
On and on and on. And you just reported, your channel just reported, your radio station just now reported, and we did as well in Hearst Media this morning, that there was a vote of no confidence of Commissioner Ravella by the officers, not by the rank and file.
Mm.
On and on and on it goes. And there are lots of recriminations, and these are the kinds of things that can really spin out of control.
And finally, Dan, we're getting into the season of, you know, we're in the pre-primary season, and, you know, the Democrat and Republican city and town committees put their imprimatur on whomever, whenever. Interesting kind of contrast here, Dan. The powers that be go with the usual in Bridgeport, even though we're going to have a multi-person primary likely. But much as Mayor Luke Bronin did in Hartford a few years ago, a relative newcomer to politics has really upended things in Hartford.
It's funny. We talk about Arunan Arulampalam, and I'm one of the few people who can quickly pronounce his name. it took years of study. No, he's a great guy, and Arunan is spoken of as a, quote, outsider, but he's been a Democratic Party loyalist for years. He ran for state treasurer. He did a really smart thing. In 2018, he qualified for a primary, and he jumped out rather than primary a race he knew he was going to lose against Sean Wooden. And he got out. And that getting out earned him the respect, admiration, and loyalty of Democrats, and he got to be a deputy commissioner. And he's now the president of a nonprofit, and now he's running for Hartford mayor. I don't know if I would call him an outsider, an inside outsider.
Okay.
But in any case, whatever he is, he managed to pull off the support of the committee over two longtime elected politicians. The reason is because Arunan is more energetic than those two guys, right? It's just a matter of energy that he's putting into it. I'm not saying that John Fonfara, the longtime senator, and Eric Coleman, the longtime senator, Fonfara is still sitting Senate. Eric Coleman is former senator, former judge, retired as a judge. Both tremendously effective when they were, and in Fonfara's case, still effective as a senator, just not as energetic as Arunin. It's as simple as that.
Mm. Yeah, and maybe, you know, we see these points, Dan, in politics in a state or a city where things change, right? Generations change. Young people come in. They hit a tone with something, and maybe it's a changing of the guard. Who knows?
Things change, but guess what? At the end of this cycle in 2023, we're still not going to have any black mayors of Connecticut cities.
Yeah.
And that's you know, you had Eric Coleman running, you have Marilyn Moore running. She's not likely to win. She could win. I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
She could win, and so could Gomes, John Gomes, in Bridgeport, and they're, you know, both people of color running against a white mayor, and everything isn't about race. Don't get old, Dan Hoffmeyer, but it's not the case. but there are 19 cities in Connecticut. 19 cities.
Mm-hmm.
Not one black mayor in 19 cities.
And that is interesting, Dan, as the way we look at things today. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media, our usual Wednesday check-in. Dan, thanks. Enjoy the rest of the week and the weekend, and we'll check back next week.
Great to be here. Stay warm.
I will. Thanks, Dan. Yeah, stay warm. It's going to be like Satan's Kitchen tomorrow and Friday. Well, guess what? The Fed's raising interest rates again today. They held off for a while, but why are they doing this, and how does this translate to you and I with more money maybe coming out of our pockets for financing? Professor of Finance, Dr. Osman Kilic, joins us from Quinnipiac University, the business department there, and maybe he can sort this all out for us. Professor, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for stopping by. Surprise, Professor, or not? It's what, 25 basis points? So explain to folks here why this is being done. I guess it's still being done on a step-by-step basis. And how does this affect the average person out there?
And first of all, I'm not surprised, because they clearly indicated that they are going to do probably one or two before this meeting. Mm-hmm. They already done one. The 25 basis point, which is the 0.25% increases, it brings the overnight rates to the 5.5% as the upper limit. And most likely, they said it's going to stay. You're just going to look at the data, basically the inflation. Inflation doesn't come back down to the 2% level as a target they are just focusing on. They may have to do one more. I wouldn't be surprised if they do one more, not in September, probably in October or November. And, of course, the main issue is here, even though inflation level compared to a year ago came down substantially,
mm-hmm.
it is still high. And based on the target that you're looking at it, plus core rate, which basically if you take away the energy and food, which is highly volatile, it changes a lot.
Sure.
It's still high. It's not coming down and as much as they are expecting. So they will stay. The interest rate is going to stay extremely high at around this level that you're looking at, which is the highest level in the last 20-plus years.
Yeah, so, Professor, why is it still high? And I've talked to numerous experts like you and yourself and the folks that study this over the past 2 years, and they point to a lot of things, the pandemic, the war in Ukraine, the stimulus packages that were sent out. Are those viable reasons? Any thoughts you have as to why it stayed so high?
Well, the main reason is here. If you end up flooding the system with about $9 trillion, that's the fiscal as well as the monetary loosening because of the COVID,
mm-hmm.
and that thing is going to create an inflation, no matter what you do. So that's what the Fed is trying to do. They are just trying to cut down the money supply, which they've been successful so far, but they are not there yet. So, you know, all those type of things, supply constraint, but everything is gone. You know, the shipping costs came down substantially. You're talking about the pre-COVID level, but the rates are still high. Food costs are still high. It's just going up. And I think it's the high inflationary environment. You're looking at anywhere between the 3 to 5% is here to stay for a while. And, you know, we have to get used to it. And then, of course, the main issue is going to be the cost of money is going up by increasing the interest rate. So since we finance almost everything, our budget is going to be affected negatively, tremendously.
So, Professor, is that, as other experts have told me, is that where most people will feel it, you think, primarily, say, if we have credit cards or variable financing? Is that where a lot of the bite's going to be for people?
And right away, today, I mean, just look, every single thing is basically linked to the Federal Reserve rates, you know, mm-hmm. the prime rate, which the banks charge us to their top credit worth of customers, and it goes up somewhere around 8.5% right now. And then all those credit card debt, which is adjustable rate. If you have a adjustable rate mortgage, it's going to go up. If you have a car loan, if it's not fixed, it's going to go up. You know, if you're trying to buy a new car, and then your interest is going to be a lot higher, which means that your monthly payment is going to be a lot higher. Mm. So it's just affordability becomes an issue. That's one of the goals of the Federal Reserve, because they want to kind of pressure the aggregate demand for the goods and services so that demand goes down. If the supply stays the same, the price level is going to decline.
Professor Osman Kilic is joining us, professor of finance from Quinnipiac University. It must be frustrating, though, professor, because you understand it and economists understand it, and I've gleaned a great deal from folks like you and yourselves over the years doing this stuff. But it must be tough for people to understand when people say, well, hey, this is caused by a lot of people buying, a lot of people spending, a lot of money in the market. To the average person, professor, they may say, well, that's good, isn't it? But inflation is the downside of it, is it not?
Oh, it is. I mean, of course, you want the economic activity, the economy to grow, right? We have a real GDP growth somewhere around 2%, which is a very decent number. I mean, historically, when you go back in the last 20 years or so, that's what you get, anywhere between 2 to 3%. So economy is growing. Unemployment rate is historically lowest level. If you're looking for a job, there are tons of jobs you can find.
Yeah.
Of course, if you move from one job to another one, your wages, salaries is going to increase double digits. So every single thing is actually creating a pressure on the inflation at a level too. So the price level is going to stay high.
Mm.
That's what it is. What the Fed is going to do, if this is the case, I'm going to keep the interest rate as high. I may end up raising the rates again.
All right. Now, that leads me to my final question for you, Doctor. I'm going to have to, Professor, I'm going to have you dust off your Quinnipiac crystal ball there. And you tell me, when does this all get back to normal? When does the Fed stop doing this and gaze into your crystal ball and tell me when do we finally slay the inflation monster? When does that happen?
It's going to take longer. I think this, they kind of slay it, but the rates, again, as I told you earlier, anywhere between 3 to 5% inflation level for at least till mid-2024.
Mm.
So it's going to stay there. If sooner or later we're going to have a recession, either towards the end of the year or early next year. So when you have a recession, economic activity is going to go down. Unemployment is going to go up. So that's the demand for the goods and services is going to decline. That's the inflation level is going to come down. But what is the cause? Is recession.
Professor Osman Kilic, professor of finance, Quinnipiac University. Professor, good stuff. Thank you. And hopefully we can chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Bye.
All right, professor. Take care. Professor Osman Kilic, Quinnipiac University. What did he say, folks? Mid next year, which is kind of what a couple of my other experts I've had on in the past year or so have said this. So mid 2024, right in time for a presidential election. But again, what did he also say? This goes back to the stimulus money that was sent out during COVID. And what, there were three, if I remember, I only got the first one because the last two were based on income and whatever, I didn't qualify, that's fine. But what did people say? And again, more oftentimes than not, if you strip the politics out of this, like I always say, and listen to what the experts say, not the people on the far left or the far right, the experts said, all right, you want to do these stimulus programs, you know, one of which, or one or two were done under President Trump, and I think a third one, was that done under Joe Biden? I don't remember. But they said, yeah, okay, people need money because they're not working, but this is going to trigger, they said, an extended period of inflation, which it did. All right, thanks once again, Professor. The big story around here today, there's other stuff going on. A couple things that are going to make your head spin as well. I always promise that for you. But no big surprise last night at the Circolo Sportivo Club in Bridgeport. Democrats backing Mayor Joe Ganim for another four-year term. The election coming up, of course, in November. The primary coming up on September the 12th. So, of course, Mayor Ganim, on the strength of, you know, what we talk about all the time, I don't care whether it's dog catcher, chief mailman, chief cook and bottle washer, governor, mayor, president, you know, with incumbency comes, you know, pretty strong support from people who want to see you back there. And the vast, 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 vast majority of Democratic Party members, in fact, all of them unanimously endorsing the mayor for another 4-year term. Now, of course, here's where the fun starts. And as we've been hearing from folks like Lenny Grimaldi and all the people covering this race over the past several months, you know, here's where the fun starts. And you are going to have the three folks who are out there and are trying to, you know, get 2,000 signatures. Now, the three Democratic challengers, Lamon Daniels, John Gomes, and Marilyn Moore. Now, the way the process works is they have until Wednesday, August 9th, which is what, 2 weeks from today, right? Am I looking at that right? Just want to make sure. Hang on. Let me bring up my trusty computer, calendar here. Yes, Wednesday, August 9th. So 2 weeks from today, all the candidates or the Democrats that want to get themselves on the ballot for a September 12th primary have to have at least 2,000 signatures each, as I understand it, to get onto the ballot for that primary, Lamon Daniels, John Gomes, and Marilyn Moore. Now, will they be able to do that? And, of course, you folks that have been following this stuff in and around not only Bridgeport, but Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, you know, there's a cost to that. Some campaigns try and do it strictly with volunteers, and it has been done, you know, in the past with volunteers. Other campaigns use a combination of volunteers and paid solicitors, and others do just the paid staff members to go out and get that. So keep in mind that if you are in the city of Bridgeport and you're a registered Democrat out there, you will be or a registered voter in the city. And if you're walking around downtown, and don't be surprised, don't think they're there to hit you over the head and take your wallet or pocketbook, at least the ones in the middle of the day. At 2 in the morning, I don't know what I could say on, you know, Park Avenue or Lafayette or whatever. But over the next couple of weeks, expect to see people out and about the beautiful Park City saying, hey, would you be willing to sign this to get this candidate, John Gomes, Lamon Daniels, or Marilyn Moore, on a primary ballot? And if they get on there, remember, they need 2,000 verified signatures. So, like I said yesterday, I don't know what the campaigns, if you need 2,000, what do you shoot for? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. What do you shoot for? If you need 2,000, is your goal 4,000? Is your goal 3,000? Is it 2,500? Is it 3,500? Having never been involved in this, in the campaigns I did work on, we didn't have to do that. But having never been involved in this, I know there's probably a method to the madness here. I don't know. And again, as you might surmise, even from being kind of a casual observer of these things, you know, if you get 2,000 signatures, it's not going to be enough. There have to be 2,000 verified signatures, meaning, and you've heard all this before, right? Well, the signature got thrown out because the name doesn't match the address, or there was a signature here that didn't have a verifiable address, or people, just from what I've been told, you know, they sign these things and sometimes it's not legible. And, you know, you've seen in the past some wise guys, Weisenheimers, knuckleheads who will sign these petitions, you know, Mickey Mouse, Orlando, Florida, and the person taking it, oh, thank you, Mr. Mouse. That's just great. Hope to see you on election day. What would I put as a wise guy? What would I put if I was signing a petition to make sure that there is at least one candidate, maybe two or three, appearing on a primary ballot in Bridgeport? What would I sign here? George Washington, Mount Vernon. Mount Vernon, huh? What section of Bridgeport is that? Well, it's on the other side of Black Rock. Really? Yeah, it's called Mount Vernon. Oh, because I'm not from around here. Yeah, okay. Yeah, go to Black Rock and keep going south. Oh, man. Great Gazoo, Mars,